WNYC Studios is supported by Earth Justice. As a national legal nonprofit, Earth Justice has more than 200 full-time lawyers who fight for a healthy environment. They're challenging utilities to lower your power bill and fight climate change by helping communities achieve clean, affordable energy for all. From stopping new gas plants to helping advance the growth of rooftop solar, Earth Justice is accelerating the clean energy transition so we can all breathe easy. Visit earthjustice.org/power to learn more. That's earthjustice.org/power.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
He dared to mix disco, Buddhism, and experimental cello. I'm John Schaefer, and today on Soundcheck, a look at the life of composer Arthur Russell. And later on the show, the eclectic outfit known as Quartet San Francisco dares to mix Dave Brubeck, Average White Band, and Looney Tunes cartoons. They'll play live in our studio. To begin today, even by the eclectic standards of New York's downtown music scene in the 70s and 80s, Arthur Russell was pretty rare. He was a classically trained cellist from Iowa's farm country. He was a Buddhist, a gay man, an experimental composer, a disco freak. He collaborated with some of the biggest names in New York music, yet he remained obscure until just a few years ago. Now, some 16 years after his death, he's the subject of a new documentary and a musical tribute this weekend. We're joined in our studio by Matt Wolf, who is the director of the film, Wild Combination, A Portrait of Arthur Russell. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi.
And Sasha Frere Jones, the pop music critic for The New Yorker magazine. Sasha, good to have you back.
Hey, John.
So, Matt, let me start with you. The film is called Wild Combination, A Portrait of Arthur Russell, to which most people will say, who? So why make this film now about Arthur Russell?
Well, I discovered Arthur's music upon the re-releases that happened fairly recently. And I became just so inspired by the music that, I reached out to Tom Lee, who was Arthur's former partner. And when I met Tom, his connection to Arthur felt really alive and real, and it inspired me to kind of develop this biographical film. So
you found this story that hadn't been told yet. I mean, as I mentioned, Arthur Russell's been dead a long time, but there was still something there, obviously. I mean, Sasha, why are we still listening to his records and perhaps only now really listening to his records so long after his death?
Well, I mean, I think the story is part of it, but I mean, not that big a part of it, really. The disco records lasted. They were durable in a way that maybe people didn't expect because they're so odd. And so I found him by accident over and over again. I didn't even know I was finding the same person. I was on Bleecker Street. It was like 1990 or so. And I found a 12-inch Kiss Me Again by Dinosaur. And I'd never seen a 12-inch on Sire Records. And it was really long. And the short version was, 10 minutes. And the long version was 13 minutes. And I just bought it. I had no idea what it was. And it's this epic disco track, but it's stranger. I mean, it's disco. It wants to be, on the floor. There's nothing super avant, but then there would be long cello passages and breakdowns, and it eventually dawned on me that it was also by the guy who had made this record World of Echo that I had, which was just sort of a man playing a cello and singing in this incredibly lonesome, lost world. And all of that music has lasted, especially the live part. I mean, I think disco is, everyone has accepted it. I don't know if accepted. Everybody knows that things happen in that world that are better than they appeared at the time. But especially now in some live performers like Final Fantasy, I'm hearing people doing what Arthur did with his voice and his cello.
All right. Now, Arthur Russell's career spans many styles, spans a fair length of time. I mean, he came to New York in the 70s and in 1980 had his first kind of hit with this song, with his band Loose Joints, and the song Is It All Over My Face?
Arthur Russell's band Loose Joints, the first of a couple of hits that they had in the early 1980s, this one from 1980. In 1983, a very different side of Arthur Russell came to light with an album called Tower of Meaning, which was actually released on Philip Glass's record label, Chatham Square Records, and which is an instrumental piece. And then there's yet another side to Arthur Russell, the one that Sasha Frere Jones was just talking about, these incredibly intimate, inward-looking songs, like this one from Arthur Russell's World of Echo.
Lucky cloud in your sky, a little rain. Lucky cloud in your sky, a little rain. Lot of honey, lucky cloud in your sky, a little honey.
Okay, punch in now.
Lucky cloud in your sky, a lot of honey.
Lucky Cloud is from Arthur Russell's 1986 record, World of Echo. And we are talking about Arthur Russell, who died some 16 years ago, with Sasha Frere Jones, pop music critic of The New Yorker magazine, and with Matt Wolf, whose new documentary is called Wild Combination, A Portrait of Arthur Russell. Matt, are you a musician yourself? Was there something in these different threads of music that appealed to you?
No, you know, I don't really come from a music point of view with the film either. I think I saw Arthur kind of as an artist, and music and sound was kind of the medium in which he was working. But, you know, I was particularly intrigued by the cultural history that Arthur was a part of, like the early kind of pre-Studio 54 underground disco parties, as well as, you know, the New York avant-garde. And Arthur's kind of insistence on traversing those categories, that really appealed to me. But I was also kind of drawn to the emotional resonance in his music, which I saw reflected in his relationships with his parents and with his partner Tom Lee, and their connection to Arthur, I thought was still very compelling.
Now, there are a couple of stories that unfold, not just this willful musician who, as you say, is equally at home in the Studio 54 set as he is, you know, curating music events at the Kitchen, you know, the downtown avant-garde space. But as you say, the relationship with his parents, who constantly refer to him in the film as Charlie, mm-hmm. his original given name. What do we read, or what do you read into his kind of sense of identity that he was, you know, changed his name to Arthur and then took the name Loose Joints for this project, Dinosaur for that project? What do you make of that?
Well, I think, you know, Arthur kind of creatively resisted the kind of, you know, singularity or the kind of static identity that one might have with one name. And that's why he worked with all these pseudonyms. It enabled him to explore all of these different musical possibilities. But I think, you know, his identity was complicated. He was from the Midwest, and I think the landscape and the culture of kind of Iowa was really central to him. You know, but at the same time, he was really kind of home in the streets of New York, you could say, or in the noise and busyness of New York. So, you know, he was also someone who was gay, and I think in a music world that, in a music world that wasn't necessarily totally supportive of gay people, he was still able to traverse all these areas.
Did you get a sense, either through the music or through actually making the documentary, of how his parents eventually came to reconcile themselves to having a gay son, which clearly, you know, was difficult for them?
Yeah, I mean, the Russells are incredibly worldly. I think they defy stereotypes of people from the Midwest. I mean, they've been there their whole lives. And, you know, I think at the time it was a surprise when they found out that he was gay, but that they quickly came to accept Arthur. And particularly now, that Arthur's gone, there's a lot of pride and excitement and joy, I think, in his newfound legacy and the renaissance surrounding his music.
Okay, now the sense that you get from the documentary is that there is that pride, but that maybe it wasn't so quickly, so quick to come on their part.
Well, they didn't have much time. I think when they found out that, you know, Arthur was gay, they also found out that he was sick. So there wasn't that much time left. And I think they really took that opportunity to connect, you know, and it's nice. And you see in the film that they formed this relationship with Tom, who remains a close friend with them as well.
All right. We're speaking about Arthur Russell. Matt Wolff's documentary is called Wild Combination, A Portrait of Arthur Russell. Sasha Frere Jones from The New Yorker magazine. The title Wild Combination, certainly an appropriate one for Arthur Russell with all these wildly eclectic things that he was doing. How did that happen? How was he able to make that work?
I think part of it has to do with, as Matt was talking about, the New York that he landed in. I mean, there was a community, as Philip Glass was describes, around the kitchen, the center, it's an art center that's still here, that Arthur was the director of, or the musical director of, for at least a little while. And then you had the beginning of disco, and it was small enough that I think there was room for someone like Arthur, who, you know, he said he wasn't much of a dancer, but he loved the repetition of disco. You can even hear in that last, the Cloud piece he played from World of Echo, you can hear him looping his own voice like a sampler, and then using the hitting the cello, the strings, sort of like a sequenced bass line. He wants to repeat. There's a great bit in the movie where Tom talks about how he would have a blender on in the background, or the fish tank, like a drone. He wanted repetition. Disco had it. Minimalism had it. And he was in a New York that had both things happening. It might not have, he seemed like a delicate creature. It might not have happened if he had to do it from whole cloth in another city. I mean, if he was in a different era in a different city, I don't know that we'd have the same recordings. So it's partially about Arthur, obviously, and his talent, but also about New York. And these were all small things. They weren't huge things, overexposed. You could kind of hide a little bit, which I think everyone needs.
Well, and as you say, you know, he was part of Philip Glass was on the scene. And in Matt's film, Glass remarks that, that he, Philip Glass, was of a generation of composers who also performed, and that so was Arthur, although Arthur's instrument was the cello.
He was one of the more eccentric of our community. The kitchen at that time was on Broome Street. It was a center for dance, video, and music. But in those days, in the 70s, if you want to know what was going on in the kitchen, you had to walk past the place and see, look at the sign on the door. It was like a restaurant that would just put up a notice, you know. There was a lot of spontaneous programming done that way, and Arthur was very much able to do, I mean, he attracted people, he was very open to other people's work.
That's Philip Glass from Matt Wolff's documentary, Wild Combination, A Portrait of Arthur Russell. Matt, as you said before, a man who seemed to feel at home in very different worlds, the kind of ultra-pop sounding world of disco and this kind of inward-looking world of the downtown avant-garde. Did he eventually fall out of one or the other of those worlds?
No, and I think in some ways the film is misleading in that it seems like his interests and his work in both disco and the avant-garde progressed sequentially, but everything was contemporaneous. And I think he was constantly pursuing various kinds of musical threads with great drive and ambition, and that, he was doing them all at the same time.
Now, where is Arthur? Everyone's talking about Arthur, but you very rarely get to see Arthur in the documentary. Was he just not a very good kind of self-promoter?
Well, I think there's a lot of self-consciousness going on. And I think at that time, we weren't in a culture where things were just so kind of excessively documented. So there isn't a tremendous amount of material with Arthur actually in it. I think in the film, it makes what we do have kind of even more special because it is so rare. But there is no kind of sit-down interview with Arthur. There's no footage of him talking to the camera. So we had to use some other kind of creative strategies in the film to bring him to life.
Right. One of those strategies, of course, is talking to Tom Lee, his longtime partner. They got together in 1980 and were together right through Arthur's death. In 1992, Arthur Russell died at the age of 40, so the career really cut short. How difficult was it to get, Tom and the parents to talk about the diagnosis and what happened after?
They were both extremely open and kind of emotionally honest, I feel like, through the process. And, you know, in a documentary, it's a long-term process where you work with people and pursue material for a long time. And I think we had a chance to develop a relationship over some time. And so by the time we were talking about these more difficult things, I felt like there was a context for that conversation.
All right, here is another clip from the film Wild Combination, A Portrait of Arthur Russell. And here is Tom Lee talking about when he finally got Arthur's diagnosis.
It's funny, I still have the paper that says that he was HIV positive. It didn't seem so bad. It seemed like that was happening to other people. I mean, certainly at that time when people were positive, they were getting sick and they were dying. And yet he seemed so real to me that it just seemed like that's not going to happen. We weren't immediately thinking, oh, you're going to die. We just were shocked, I guess. And I was tested, and was not positive.
Tom Lee, a longtime partner now with the executor of Arthur Russell's estate, and that's from Matt Wolff's film, the documentary Wild Combination, A Portrait of Arthur Russell. Sasha Frere Jones from The New Yorker magazine also with us. Sasha, it's tempting to look for, you know, some resonance, some effect of his illness, of his diagnosis in the creativity of his later years. Do you hear that?
Honestly, no, I don't. I think Steve at Autico Records has, if I understand correctly, Matt can correct me if I'm wrong. There seems to be a lot of stuff that still hasn't been reissued, and I've listened to everything I can get my hands on. There seems to be a pretty consistent feeling through the body of work, and I haven't heard any late pieces that felt radically different to me, and I think that may be a result of the fact, as you see in the movie, that Arthur was always alone in one way or another and creating in isolation, and he sometimes had trouble joining other people's bands, and so if he was maybe a little bit more isolated by the illness, that wouldn't have necessarily been such a change, whereas for another artist, it might have affected the work. But I mean, this is all mind reading and guesswork. I don't hear any radical difference. It all feels like one piece of work to me.
Okay. Now, during his life, he was very much a cult figure. So
yes and no. I think he was, not to interrupt you, but those disco records, which were done, I remember Tom, when I spoke to him, because I wrote about this Arthur 4 years ago or so, and Tom was very helpful. And he said one reason he chose a different name is he just thought that Arthur Russell wasn't a very disco name. And then he kept trying to find a different... maybe I've misremembered, that's totally apocryphal, but I'm pretty sure he told me that. And so he was choosing different names, and he wanted them to sound like Dance, Loose Joints, or Dinosaur.
Right.
And those records did fairly well, although they didn't necessarily make Arthur a household name, but several of them sold quite well.
Right. Well, Tell You Today in 1983 was a fairly decent hit on modern rock radio, as it was known back then.
And Go Bang was even, a little bit younger, but... when I started going to clubs, I was hearing Go Bang. I mean, I was hearing these tracks. They were kind of cool forever. And it's the other work that took its own time to sort of emerge, although people were passionate about Another Thought and World of Echo for a long time.
So, but even as you say, some of the better known hits
did
not have Arthur Russell's name. So if you said to someone who had been enjoying Let's Go Swimming or Go Bang or any of these songs, you know, what do you think of Arthur Russell? They would have been like, who?
Right. Unless we're nerds. Looking at the label.
Like us.
Right.
So where do we hear his influence today?
I think the disco work has been, has crept through many, many people's work. I'm blanking right now because there's so many people I think who have drawn from him. It's easier for me now because this is a newer phase to track the other, the live, the cello, and the voice playing, which I hear a lot in, as someone even that Matt knows, Owen Pallett of Final Fantasy, who does a lot of solo violin and voice work, which reminds me of Arthur. There are other bands like Grizzly Bear, and the Dirty Projectors that do a sort of similar vocal. I mean, there's a way that Arthur's work wandered, although it was very simple. But when he was playing just with his cello, he could sort of go anywhere, and they're both simple and very harmonically complex because he didn't have to have anyone follow him. And if you actually orchestrated those pieces, they would turn out to be a little bit trickier than you at first they sound, which is a testament to him, I think.
All right, well, let's hear Arthur Russell doing his song Get Around to It, and then One of the people who has sort of, you know, reflected a bit of his influence is Tracy Thorn, the singer from the group Everything But the Girl, who does a cover of this same song. So here's the original. If you can get around to it. Show me what the girl does to the boy. If you can get around to it. Show me what the girl does. Show me what the girl does to the boy. If you can get around to it. Show me what to do. Get around to it from Arthur Russell, one of a number of songs of his that have recently been covered by other artists, ranging from Sweden's Jens Lekman to this version of Get Around to It by Tracy Thorn. Arthur Russell's Get Around to It, this version by Tracy Thorn. And we've been talking about Arthur Russell, his life, his music. Matt Wolf is the director of the documentary Wild Combination, A Portrait of Arthur Russell. And Sasha Frera-Jones, pop music critic of The New Yorker, has been with us as well. Matt, just a quick final question. Sasha referred to the fact there's still lots of unreleased material. You know, is there going to be like a Son of Wild Combination? I mean, is there that much more out there that you uncovered in the making of this film?
No, I think the most interesting material is all in the film. In terms of music, there's a lot of music people will find in the film that hasn't been released. And as I know, there's a new record that's coming out in September that will feature, Arthur's country and folk music. So I hope the film sparks people's interest in Arthur in that they can discover the music that's out there and that there'll be much more to come.
Well, Wild Combination screens this Thursday at 7 and 9 p.m. at The Kitchen on West 19th Street. And The Kitchen's hosting a musical tribute to Arthur Russell on Friday and Saturday night, both at 8 p.m. Details on the soundcheck page at WNYC.org. Matt Wolf, Sasha Frera-Jones, thank you both for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Up next, our soundcheck CD picks of the week, and then coming up later, this Grammy-nominated ensemble, Quartet San Francisco, tips their hat to an eclectic array, including Dave Brubeck, the Average White Band, and the music of the Looney Tunes cartoons on their new album. We'll have a live performance from Quartet San Francisco in just a few minutes. This is Soundcheck.